Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Voga Grand Breeze by Ed Robinson, narrated by Charles Constant. 1. When I saw him hit her, I knew I had to act. I'd been telling myself to mind my own business ever since they'd anchored nearby. Now I had no choice but to get involved. I couldn't call the police, and no one else was around to help the poor woman. She'd been taking verbal abuse from her male partner for days. Now he'd stepped over the line. They came in on a nice island packet sailboat 3 days prior. He yelled at her while they anchored. Later that night, he was yelling at her again. He told her she was a worthless know-nothing who didn't belong with such a capable sailor as himself. Over the next few days, I heard him tell her loudly and belligerently that she used too much water, that she didn't know a sheet from a line, and that she wouldn't know the pointy end was the front if he didn't tell her. I was tempted to pull up my anchor and leave them to their bickering, but something told me to hang around. The time had come for me to act. The angry man on the sailboat had forced me into action, which automatically labeled him an asshole in my book. I'd heard enough out of his mouth since they'd arrived to determine that he was not a very nice fellow. She'd gone down when he struck her. As I got into my little flats boat to have a less-than-friendly chat with him, I saw him backhand the woman as she tried to get up. Now I was pissed. I was not a small woman. I was a grown-ass man with an attitude. I wanted to see how he'd react to someone his size. He yelled at me before I made it to the side of their boat.
"This ain't none of your business, mister," he said. "You keep right on going."
I ignored the man and tied a bowline off his midships. Before he could get to it, I was on board and ready for however rough he wanted it to go. He pulled up short of me and yelled at me to get off his boat or he'd call the cops. I drove a good solid right into his face that sent him flailing onto his back in the cockpit. I was on top of him before he could recover. I shoved his face down into fiberglass and drove a knee into his lower back. He whined like a little girl. "Not so tough after all, eh?" I said.
"You broke my nose," he said, whimpering.
"You're lucky I don't break your skull, you piece of shit," I told him. "Now, I'm going to take the lady someplace safe while you cool your jets. You will not follow if you know what's good for you."
"She has no place to go," he said. "That's why she's with me. I should never have let her on board in the first place."
"I think the mistake was hers," I said. "Only a sad excuse for a man beats a woman." She was sitting up in the corner, wiping tears with her forearm. Her long brown hair covered her face. I didn't see any blood, which was good, but one eye was puffed up. It would be black and blue tomorrow. "You okay, ma'am?"
"I think so," she said. "Where are you taking me?"
"Away from this loser," I said. "Don't worry, we'll figure something out. You do want to leave, don't you?"
"I guess I do," she said. "But he's right. I've got no place to go."
"We'll work on that later," I said. "First, we get you out of here. Grab your things while I keep an eye on him."
"You'll be sorry, Eileen," the man said. "This was the best you were going to get."
"Shut up, douchebag," I said, "before I decide you're not hurt bad enough." I looked at him with contempt. He had a nice boat, so he probably had some money. He took advantage of whatever her situation was to isolate her out here and abuse her. He and his type disgusted me. His weak response to my attack was typical. He couldn't push a full-sized man around like he could a defenseless woman. He had issues that only a good ass-whooping could cure, but I'd made my point. The woman was down below packing her belongings. I had no idea what to do with her next. I only knew that I had to remove her from the situation before it got worse. Bodies were easy to dispose of on boats. I didn't want that for her or any woman. If she needed a few bucks for a cab, that was no problem, as long as she was off this boat and away from this idiot. She came up through the companionway with a duffel and a purse.
"This is it," she said. "If I forgot anything, it's not important enough to worry about."
"Climb down into my boat," I told her. "I'll be right with you." She did as I instructed. I turned to the man one more time. "Listen, pal," I said. "You don't want to fuck with me, okay? I'll feed you to the gators without a second thought. Just let it go. Take the loss and live for another day." I untied my boat and climbed into it. I drove back over to my Hatteras with an unexpected passenger. I helped her aboard and took her bag into the guest stateroom. I put a pistol in my waistband, in case Mr. Dickwad tried anything.
"Where are we going to go?" she asked.
"Out of here and away from him," I said. "I know you're scared, but stay calm. Shit will work out." I fired up the engines and watched the sailboat for a few minutes. He'd gone below, so I couldn't see him. He was probably putting ice on his nose. I checked on the woman and found her bawling her eyes out in the salon. "Shit," I said, grabbing her a paper towel instead of a tissue. "Hang in there, girl. You're going to be okay." I left her alone to cry and went up on the bridge. I raised the anchor and started across the bay. There was no indication from the sailboat that it would attempt to follow. Once clear of Pelican Bay, I pushed the throttles forward and blasted across the Boca Grande Pass. My little flats boat was surfing the wake behind me like a toy. I slowed enough to make sure it wouldn't capsize and continued north. I left the ICW and entered the channel leading into the backside of the town of Boca Grande. I hailed the Boca Grande Marina on the radio. They had only one slip available. It was a small boutique marina that did not allow liveaboards, but we could stay for the night. It was once called Miller's Marina, and the restaurant was still called Miller's Dockside. Above it was the Eagle Grill, with fancier fare. All I wanted was not to be seen by the angry man on the island packet, and to dispose of my newly acquired passenger. I received excellent service from the dockhands and an assurance from the dockmaster that he would make sure my stay was a pleasant one. For $350 per foot per night, it ought to be. Places like this were eager to please customers on boats like mine. As the owner of a 54-foot Hatteras, I'd be well taken care of. If I came in with the old trawler that I used to own, the service would be less stellar. I was still getting used to being treated like a wealthy man because of my boat. No one had to know that I hadn't spent a cent to get it. Instead, I'd run a mission for my wealthy friend, and the boat was my payment. The strange woman in my salon was no longer crying. She'd brushed her hair out and pulled herself together. I guessed she was about my age. I noticed for the first time that she had a nice figure. She was in great shape, but her looks were dominated by her long, thick, brown hair. She'd be better served to put it up in a ponytail or something. It didn't seem like it would be comfortable in the Florida heat. I had no interest in pursuing this woman. It wasn't that she wasn't attractive. I just figured that the last thing she needed was to be hit on by an old horn dog like me.
"Where are we?" she asked.
"The town of Boca Grande on Gasparilla Island," I said. "You can get a ride to the airport from here or wherever you need to go."
"I don't have a home."
"You're homeless?" I asked. "Like living on the street homeless?"
"It's a long story."
"Let's go up to the bar and get a beer," I said. I listened better with a drink in my hand.
"I'll buy," she said. "It's the least I can do. I don't think I've properly thanked you."
"I was beginning to think you didn't want to be rescued." Miller's Dockside was set up to be a sports bar. They had several TVs, including one directly behind the bar, which was distracting. They did have Yingling on tap, which was nice and cold. My guest ordered the same. "You can start with your name," I said. "I thought I heard it from your boyfriend, but it slipped my mind."
"Eileen," she said. "Eileen Pekodner."
"That's a name I've not heard before," I said. "Married or maiden?"
"Married," she said, "but no longer." "And you are?"
"Mead Breeze," I said. "But just Breeze to anyone who asks. Where's home?"
"It was Crofton, Maryland," she said.
"How did you end up in Pelican Bay on a sailboat with a complete asshole?"
"It all started with this book I read," she began. "Leap of Faith. Quit your job and live on a boat." The idea of chucking it all and leaving the rat race fascinated me. So I sold all my stuff, liquidated my business, and sought out a man with a boat.
"How did you do that?"
"Dating sites," she said. "I put my intentions in my profile, searching for a man with a boat to sail away with."
"And you ended up with that guy?"
"He was in Key West at the time," she explained. "I flew down to meet him, and it was wonderful. He treated me like a queen, and we had so much fun together. I flew home and finished taking care of my affairs, and join him for good. Or so I thought.
You've got some money then, I asked. You can take care of yourself?
Other than the whole shattered dreams thing, she said. I'm a bit lost at the moment.
Maybe food will help, I said. Waiter, can we get a menu, please? I was disappointed to find the menu to be full of pretentious bullshit offerings. What the hell is shiitake truffle risotto? Is saffron rice like regular rice? The filet mignon and grouper were pretty straight up, but both were $45. They wanted $30 for a dozen oysters on the half shell.
Don't worry about it, Eileen said. I'm paying, remember?
I ordered the shrimp and grits, which was only $22. It was the cheapest entree on the menu. She ordered a dinner salad with goat cheese crumbles, candied pecans, and key lime vinaigrette. The locals in Boca Grande tend to come from old money. It costs $6 to get on the island by car. That tends to keep the riffraff to a minimum. Homes sell for millions whenever one becomes available. The golf course is a sight to behold, but you won't step foot on it unless you're an ex-president or executive from a Fortune 500 company. The Bush family often vacationed here. There is a jet port on the mainland that provides limo service for those flying in on their private planes. The Gulfside beach is beautiful, and the fishing is fantastic most of the year. I'd been all around the area on boats, but rarely ventured to the downtown area. I didn't know a soul who lived there. Eileen seemed to be off in a faraway place. I couldn't blame her, but it made for an uncomfortable situation. Everyone else in the place was carrying on light-hearted conversations while the two of us stared at our beers. We were strangers with little to say to one another. I had to break the silence. "So where to now?" I asked.
"I haven't got a clue," she said. "Is there any place to stay here?"
"You could check in with the Gasparilla Inn," I said, "but it's expensive." She used her phone to look it up. Amazing devices these days, but I'd never own another one. They may be convenient and make life easier, but they destroy any privacy you think you might have. I couldn't afford to be tracked by any company, or worse, by a government agency. She whistled at something she'd found.
$2,200 for a week with only a twin bed, she said. And it's closed until October.
I'm sure there are bed and breakfast places, but I don't have any personal knowledge of them.
Let me check out Airbnb, she said.
I ordered us two more beers while she fiddled with the phone.
Here we go, she said. One-bedroom flat in historic downtown Boca Grande for $99 a night.
She showed me a picture of the place. I recognized it. It's right across the street from the Temp, I said. Very much downtown.
How far from the beach?
A few blocks, I said. Sounds cheap for this island. You want to go check it out?
If you don't mind, she said. I don't know my way around.
I've got nothing better to do. We finished up with our food, which was quite good, and walked out Railroad Avenue to First Street, then one block over to Park Avenue. The Temptation was a local favorite bar and restaurant that I'd been inside of a total of one time. I was not a local, therefore not particularly welcomed by the loud and boisterous crowd at the bar. Directly across the street was a condo complex called the Village Inn. It was a two-story white stucco building lined with pastel blue hurricane shutters. A dozen golf carts lined the right side of the place. You weren't cool in Boca Grande if you didn't drive a golf cart all over town. It was not a hotel. There was no office. Eileen went back to her phone and, after a few minutes, pronounced that she had succeeded in renting an efficiency unit. She was given a lockbox code after paying with a credit card. It was all very modern, but too techy for me. I followed her to a second-floor unit, and she retrieved the key. The place was clean, bright, and tiny. There were two twin beds, a small sitting area, and a kitchenette. The overall space was less than that of your average hotel room, but it was centrally located and not far from the beach. For that, I suppose it was a steal. She seemed happy with it.
"I booked it for a week," she said. "Hopefully I can figure out my next step before they kick me out."
"It's so small," I said. "I've got more room on the boat than this."
"Is that an invitation?"
"Nothing personal, but no," I said. "I'm such a loner, I could be a monk."
"Sit down and tell me about it," she said. "Good-looking man like you, why the need to be alone?"
I recently lost my partner, I said. It was a big leap for me to love another person, but I gave it my best.
Didn't work out?
She was killed, I said. Shot down in cold blood. I killed the shooter and went on the run. I'm just now starting to settle into a new life without her. I hope you understand that having you aboard wouldn't help right now. I've got issues. You've obviously got issues. We'd be one big bag of issues on a boat together. I vote no to that.
Sorry to cramp your style, she said. I'm sorry for your loss, really. It was a flip comment. Forget it.
I don't know why I blurted out my personal stuff like that. It wasn't like me. The close personal interaction with this woman was revealing that I was not yet healed or ready for any social life at all. I wanted only to be left alone. Now I was even madder at the knucklehead who I'd seen hit her. He forced me into this. Now I was the one dealing with the aftermath. I had a mind to leave right then and go back to kick his ass some more. My fault, I said. Neither one of us is a whole person at the moment. You can stay here if you want. I'll go back and get your stuff.
That's too much for me to ask, she said. I'll come pick it up later. You go ahead without me.
Hudson's grocery is about a block up the street, I told her. It's overpriced, but you can get just about anything you need. I come in here to get beer every now and then.
Great, she said. Go ahead now. I'll be all right and out of your hair. I can call before I come to get my stuff.
In case you haven't noticed, I don't have a phone, I said. I'll be there tonight. I'd like to leave tomorrow.
What's your rush? She asked. You're the only person I know here.
We don't really know each other, I said. This isn't my kind of place. I'll go anchor out somewhere tomorrow.
Have it your way, she said. I'll be down later.
2. I bought a case of beer from Cappy's Market on the way back. It was getting heavy as I passed Widden's Marina, but I made it to the boat without my arm falling off. All the walking caused a recently injured ankle to swell. I propped up that foot and started working on the beer. I had to get up every 12 ounces, so it never stayed elevated for long. A couple on a smaller boat stopped briefly to admire the Hatteras. "Anything behind the name Incognito?" the man asked. "If I told you, I'd have to kill you," I responded. That broke up the chit-chat in a hurry. Some folks have no sense of humor. I was 5 or 6 beers in when Eileen showed up.
"Permission to come aboard?" she asked.
"Granted," I said. "Make yourself at home. Get yourself a beer." She sat on the upholstered bench behind the cabin, so I spun the fighting chair around to face her. The breeze kept her hair in perpetual motion, almost always blocking her face. I thought maybe she was hiding a shiner on her eye or a bruised cheek. "Feeling better?" I asked.
"Mad more than hurt," she said. "I need some time to rethink this lifestyle choice. It's been tougher than I expected."
"Cocktails and sunsets," I said. "Nobody thinks about the bugs, heat, infrequent showers, and hauling your poop around in a tank."
"No air conditioning on that sailboat," she said. "Not at anchor, anyway. I noticed it was nice and cool inside your boat over in Pelican Bay."
"I've been treating myself," I said. "Plus, I have some things that don't react well to the humidity and salt air."
"So it runs off the generator?"
"As long as the fuel lasts," I said. "And as long as the money lasts."
"This boat had to cost a pretty penny," she said. "What is it that you do for a living?"
"Marine salvage," I lied. "Like Travis McGee."
"I've read all those books," she said. "I'm an insatiable reader. I picture Travis a little taller than you, but you've got the look."
"What look is that?"
"The tan," she said. "Kind of weathered. You've spent years in the sun, a little rough around the edges."
"That I have," I told her. "I've lived on a boat in this area for longer than I care to remember."
"Too bad I didn't find you on a dating site," she said.
"No phones, no computers," I reminded her. "But you'd be surprised at my relationships over the years."
"Boat chicks?"
"Some, but not all," I said. "Nothing really worked out in the long run until the last one."
"Does it ever?" she asked. "I mean, does anything really work out in the long run?"
"Shit works out," I told her for the second time. "Maybe not the way you wanted it to, but the sun keeps rising and you go on living."
"You're not charging me by the hour for this counseling, are you?"
"Advice is free," I said. "Take it for what it's worth."
"I can't believe I put myself in this position," she said. I should have never leveraged my future for a man I didn't know.
So why did you? I asked. You seem like a smart, capable woman.
The dream, like you said. Sunsets and cocktails in beautiful, warm places. The idea of it consumed me and clouded my judgment.
At least you're not broke, I said. You can start over.
That's just the thing, she said. Is my dream really over? Do I go back to what I ran away from in the first place?
I can't answer that, I said. Maybe you can start over down here, but I wouldn't recommend Boca Grande unless you've got way more money than I thought.
What else is around here? She asked.
I only know about the places I can get to by boat, I began. Inglewood is nice and somewhat affordable. Punta Gorda is a great town with lots to do. What is it that you're looking for?
I love the beach, she said. But a pool will do just fine in a pinch.
Drive off this island and turn left, I said. Placida, Cape Hayes, Inglewood, they've all got good beach access. Buy a pool home in Port Charlotte or Punta Gorda. A little farther from the beach, but plenty of nightlife and things to do.
This is what I need to work out, she said. Good info, thanks.
Or buy your own boat, I suggested. Marina life ain't that bad. Lots of them have pools. Plenty of single men hanging around.
I don't know enough about boats to manage one myself, she said. I'm not exactly mechanically inclined.
Just a thought, I said. I'm presenting you with options. You'll find your own way, I'm sure.
You still leaving tomorrow?
That's the plan, I said. You're safe. You've got a place to stay for the week. You can handle it from here, right?
All very logical, she said. But you're the only person I know here. I can't call you. It will just be goodbye, and that's that.
Sometimes the hero actually does ride off into the sunset, I said. But I'll tell you what. Meet me at the marina the day after tomorrow. I'll ride over to Pelican Bay and check on your sailor buddy. I can let you know if he's still around, and we can have dinner.
I'll rent a car and take a look around, she said. Maybe I'll have something to report as well.
I watched her walk up the dock, and I decided that the view from behind wasn't half bad. I told myself to forget about any romantic attachment. She'd been through a life-altering trauma. Sex between us would only further complicate her life. I skipped dinner and boosted my blood alcohol content with some rum. In the morning, I filled up the Redfisher and some gas cans with fuel, paid my tab with the marina, and topped off the Hatteras with diesel. I slowly motored out of the channel towards the ICW, trying to decide where to anchor. There was no wind, and the forecast was for more of the same. I left the channel and dropped the hook in 8 feet of water behind the golf course. I was just in time to watch the sun go down. I'd never anchored there before, but I'd seen a few other boats do it. It wasn't fit for rough weather, but it would do for a few days. The next morning, I pulled the flats boat up alongside and loaded it with fishing gear. It started right up, and I shot across the shallows on the backside of Gasparilla Island until I reached the pass. The tarpon had scattered in the late summer heat to deep holes, either offshore or up inside Charlotte Harbor. I zipped across to Cayo Costa and slowed down, entering Pelican Bay. The island packet I was looking for was not there. I exited through the back door of the bay and took a look around Yuseppa Island. There was no sign of him. He wasn't at Cabbage Key either. I assumed he'd moved on. I worked my way into the shallows behind Cabbage Key and started casting for redfish. The sun was up too high for them, so I didn't find any. I kept working the mangroves into Murdoch Bayou until I came to some docks. I pulled a nice snook out from under the second one, but they were out of season. I kept plopping a DOA soft plastic lure on a quarter-ounce jig head into shady spots until I got a hit. This time it was a barely legal redfish. He went into the live well. I was fishing for food, not for fun, so I left the rest of the resident fish alone for the day. I drove slowly out of the bayou, thinking about the island packet and its asshole captain. I'd been gone for a few days, so he could be 100 miles away by now, but I'd feel better if I knew that for sure. Burnt Storm Marina was only 10 miles away, so I shoved the throttle forward and hung on for the ride. The entrance to Burnt Store is an odd one. Birds stand ankle-deep on either side of the channel. The dredging that had taken place meant simply scooping up some mud and dropping it a few yards away. It had created only a narrow cut in open water for larger boats to drive through. I'd been inside several times to get fuel. The attendants had always been polite and helpful. They offered to take my trash and even for me to take a quick shower. The boat I was looking for was a common sight in Florida. They were built in Largo and had earned a solid reputation. True Colors was the name of the boat Eileen had been on, which I found ironic. I'd spent some time on a similar vessel owned by an old acquaintance I called Colorado Bob. He used to come out to Pelican Bay from Punta Gorda and hang out. The last I knew, he'd taken the boat to Puerto Rico. I'd probably never see him again. I liked Colorado Bob. He'd been nice to me when I had nothing. But such was the life of Breeze. People came in and out of my life like the passing storms. Not much was constant. I could count the friends that I could locate today on one hand. All of them were in Fort Myers Beach. I was avoiding Fort Myers Beach for the time being. A man named Jim Starr had tried to rob me there. I didn't think he would try again, but there wasn't any point in making myself easy for him to find. I had avoided my home in Pelican Bay for a few days to stay away from the man on the island packet. Now I was looking for him. I idled around inside the marina, looking for True Colors. I started in the South Basin, passing Cass Key Restaurant and the office. I moved over to the North Basin, and there he was, tied up in a slip along the seawall. I didn't see anybody aboard, which was well enough. I didn't feel like another physical confrontation. Knowing where he was gave me some comfort. He wasn't likely to find Eileen in Boca Grande from here. I turned around and stayed at idle speed. There were manatees everywhere I looked. Almost all of them had prop scars. I waited until I was completely out of the narrow entrance channel before laying into the throttle once again. It was fun to rocket on top of the water when it was calm. The Yamaha outboard cut a clean wake, and the little boat seemed happy to run its speed. I kept running flat out for 10 miles until I got near my Hatteras, whom I affectionately called Miss Six. She floated undisturbed with her generator running. It was nice and cool when I went inside. I had to stop to pinch myself. My old life in Florida was full of sweat, DEET, and desperation. I could never have imagined living on a boat like this, enjoying the comforts of air conditioning and plush leather furnishings. I had everything a man on a boat could dream of, but it all cost money to operate and maintain, much more than my old trawler had. I had money, something just south of $1 million. It was all in cash, hidden in various places on board. Each fill-up of diesel ran me over $3,000. If I never traveled a single mile, the generator would eventually drink all of my fuel. I bought gas for the flatsboat. I bought too much beer and booze. I enjoyed occasional marina stays. I'd just paid $200 per night in Boca Grande, which was highway robbery. Eileen was only paying $100 for an apartment. I'd brought my own house and paid twice that much. I had not sat down to any real math on how long I could maintain this lifestyle. I didn't want to know yet. I just wanted to live, undeterred by the goings-on of the modern world, for as long as I could. The redfish I caught was still alive when I filleted him. His bare carcass tried to swim when I tossed it overboard. I swear the meat was still twitching when it hit the frying pan. It settled into the mixture of butter and lemon and soon became an incredible meal. You can't buy that in a restaurant anywhere in the world for any amount of money. If only Brody were here to share the moment with. I'd stayed busy since her death. I had done everything and anything not to dwell on the loss. It was only in quiet moments with no one around that it would all come back to me. Making someone pay was still unfinished business. I was going to have to get a grip on that. Sooner or later, I would need to risk all that I'd gained to exact revenge. I couldn't deny it forever. Eliminating her killer would probably destroy any chance I'd ever have of living freely again. It was time to sit down with Captain Fred and discuss my options. He had contacts in Washington that could clear up some of the confusion about who ordered Brody's killing. I decided to go to Fort Myers Beach soon after meeting Eileen. She was a big girl. I'd done enough to help her already. There was no reason for me to hang around and hold her hand any longer.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?